is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
To Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, the author of the new book, Noble Cause, we turn to Australia, Western Australia, headquartered at Perth, and rare earths, as I've been taught to say, not so rare, except, Gregory, a very good evening to you. You show me a report by a colleague of yours, David Archibald, out of Perth, about rare earths, not just in Australia, but worldwide, and how it is we came to a place where the People's Republic of China, in its belligerence, decided to threaten the whole world with withholding what it has of rare earth manufacturing in Inner Mongolia, I believe, to withhold it and starve down the high-end businesses that depend on rare earths for electronics. Of course, this would have a style of damaging the Chinese economy even more than it's been damaged by the Communist Party, but still, the threat was real. And Mr. Trump, on his most recent embassy and other conversations around the world, identified that we have now an effort to offset the Chinese monopoly with development of rare earth creation, mining, and production around the world. There will be a lag. David Archibald, in presenting this information about all these rare earths, was this unknown before, Gregory, or was it just what you'd have to say is a moment where the leaders of the West never thought that the Chinese withhold it? Is there a rational explanation for how the world came to be hostage to Chinese pouting? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. And yes, the answer to why the world became hostage to the People's Republic of China is, in one word, laziness. The reality was that, as President Trump has recently acknowledged, rare earths are not so rare, in fact. And we've been saying that in our organization for several years, because we've known about the massive rare earths, so-called rare earths, resources in Australia, particularly in Western Australia and Queensland, and probably elsewhere in the country as well. We also know that they're prevalent in parts of Africa and Congo, in Southeast Asia, particularly Thailand, Cambodia, Malaysia, and Vietnam. And David, who's a colleague of mine and has written for Defense and Foreign Affairs in the past, and we meet regularly when I'm in Australia or when he's in the US, and he's been going through this for a long time. He was able to demonstrate that the PRC, the People's Republic of China, was able to capture the rare earths market by shaving its margins, shall we say, its profit margins, to the point where they were probably even losing money. They were certainly using unsafe mining practices. And this is extremely important, because these rare earths are often highly pollutant. And the town in Inner Mongolia, the area in Inner Mongolia where the PRC gets most of its rare earths, is plagued by extraordinary high rates of cancer. So it points to the fact that in getting these rare earths captured from the earth and then processing, you either take a lot of risks or you have to develop expensive ways of protecting the workers. And what we see in Australia, and we've been emphasizing for some time, is that Australia, because of its high labor costs, has pioneered the world in several things. Firstly, mining software. 80% of mining software in the world comes from Perth. In robotic mining. So they've reduced a lot of the problems because of computer programming and robotics, to the point where you minimize the exposure of workers to health risks. This has to apply also to processing these rare earths. And the Chinese kept keeping the prices down in order to make the cost of exploiting rare earths elsewhere in the world prohibitive, because the rest of the world did care about its workers and miners. So now the Chinese are running out of rare earths, and we witness that by the fact that they're actually importing themselves a lot of the rare earths which they sell to the West. They're importing those from Southeast Asia, and then selling them on to the rest of the world. So It's now we're seeing an end game now. The Chinese are running out of negotiating options because they're running out of control of the supply. The rest of the world is exploiting their rare earth elements because the market is so demanding that there's going to be, and there is already, a constant demand for some of these rare earths. For example, rare earth derivative products are used extensively for making things like the F-35, and 400 kilograms of rare earths are used to make a single F-35, and that's 3% of the F-35's dry weight, empty weight. So, that's a consistent demand, and you've got it, of course, in electric vehicles, you've got it in telephones and other products. So the demand is there. So the producers of these rare earths, particularly in Western Australia, are really ramping up that production. And they're also ramping up in Southeast Asia as well. And in Australia, a lot of the rare earths which are being processed are initially going to Southeast Asia, where, once again, there is less concern about the worker safety. And so a lot of the processing is being done there at the moment, particularly Malaysia, which has lower labor costs as well. So now the whole rare earth marketplace is out of the control of the People's Republic of China. There'll have to be more processing outside of China in order for there to be a stable supply for Europe and North America. But what we can see is this is the last bargaining chip in the China-US-China-West trade war. That's the last leverage which Beijing has, and that's gone now.
Am I correct in saying that China was, by threatening the West, threatening its own future? Doesn't it depend upon the electronic manufacturing business to sustain its workforce?
Absolutely does. And what we see in the last year in the People's Republic of China, of course, is this internal civil war amongst the leadership between the reformists in the Communist Party, the Xi Jinping faction of the Communist Party, and the People's Liberation Army. That's now come to a head and is focusing. And in order to, if you like, bring the U.S. to a negotiating table, they knew they had to use the rare earths as their last ditch chance, if you like, to bring the U.S. into some form of agreement so that the U.S. would commit to supporting, open trade again with the PRC and basically pull the U.S. away from trying to topple the Communist Party of China. And that worked to a degree, but in the latter period, building up to the fourth party plenum of the Chinese Central Committee of the Communist Party, it became clear to President Trump that the bargaining position of Beijing was disappearing. And so he started this whole process of doing deals around the world on rare earths. And he basically used the Australian Prime Minister to give him a showcase during the fourth plenum in Beijing, but to threaten China, saying, well, we've got the rare earth thing sorted out with Australia. Prime Minister Albanese of Australia was very, very happy with that, not knowing that President Trump was then going to go on to the ASEAN summit in Kuala Lumpur to do separate deals with Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, and the like, and then go on to the APEC summit in South Korea to do the same thing with the South Koreans and then separately with the Japanese, so that all of a sudden this big coalition of countries which could both mine their own resources in rare earths and process them satisfactorily, and that's really was the U.S. answer to China's attempt at leverage, and that's part of why we see the right. Whole stalemate of the fourth plenum going down the drain.
David Archibald's concluding remarks on his report: there is no shortage of rare earth deposits. There is only a temporary shortage of processing capacity. Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We turn to violence next. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.